Hello. We are now going to do episode 5. This episode is about bringing new facilitators on board, preparing these new facilitators for their role, and sharing feedback with them after the workshop. My name is Mariki de Villiers, and with me is Ian Cooper.
Hello again, Mariki. Nice to be back with you.
And Francois Kutsia.
Hello again.
How do you involve or how do you get new facilitators to work with you in the Stripe HIV workshops?
So we're talking about facilitators in terms of the overall workshop or module facilitators. We try to identify potential facilitators beforehand, either trying to recruit them ourselves, or we see people who've expressed an interest in attending the workshop and invite them to consider becoming facilitators. We meet with these potential facilitators beforehand. We usually on the afternoon before the workshop spend an hour or two with them. We send them the module material to read in advance. Of course, they don't necessarily always do that, but the idea is that they've had some time to look at it beforehand. And then in this pre-workshop session, we go through the workshop with them, first talking about some of the things we've covered in these podcasts. What is the educational philosophy that underpins the workshops? What are we trying to do? How do they run? The process, roles and responsibilities, etc. And then we try to assign tasks to the new facilitators. And that depends on how open they are to taking on something on board straight away. At the very least, they can assist with facilitating a small group. But often we say, won't you run one particular activity within a module, for example, just so they can start getting used to it. Where possible, what we've done is that we run a follow-up workshop at that site, HIV Fundamentals workshop at that site, and then we take these people who've been potential facilitators, who've hopefully agreed to become facilitators, and we've had quite a number who've done that, and we try to allocate them an actual module that they will present, but always with an experienced person or one of our team that is co-facilitating that module with them, giving them the lead but supporting them in that. And ultimately, the aim is that we expect them to be able to run the workshops without us. Okay. And certainly, we've got that happening already in Upington. Yeah.
So in your experience, who are the people who's come forward to volunteer to be facilitators?
Well, we've had quite a range. So we've had a number of doctors, including family physicians and a pediatrician. We've had quite a number of nurse educators and other professional nurses. Mentioned before, we've got a speech, language, and hearing therapist who's come on board. Anyone else that particularly comes to mind?
Yeah, from the nurses, it's often the nurses involved with HIV and TB training programs. And they are often very keen to be involved.
So just in terms of the first thing that you said, you identify facilitators, but if you are not familiar with your audience beforehand, how do you identify facilitators beforehand then? Are there things that you can do?
Well, it's really, if the workshop is mainly aimed at students and newly qualified professionals,
yes.
Then you see some people who are wanting to come are actually more experienced people. Those are the kind of people that one can look
maybe
at.
Maybe their family physician supervisor or the nurse trainer or so on.
Okay. So certainly, for example, with Kimberley, where we were basing our workshop in a nursing college, there were a number of the nurse educators who were keen to be part of the process. So they were very naturally became facilitators.
And you contact them then beforehand.
Yeah.
Yeah, in one of the districts, we're very fortunate to have somebody at the regional office that's involved with HIV care in that region. And that person identified a number of people that would be good facilitators.
Okay.
Really helped us.
Okay.
In fact, the entire workshop is somewhat different in terms of the fact that the entire workshop was specifically focused on facilitators,
right,
and training facilitators. Yes. I mean, they experienced a Stripe Fundamentals, HIV Fundamentals workshop themselves, but almost all of them in the workshop were people who wanted to be facilitators,
right,
going
yeah.
forward. So there was a much more of a focus on learning about the process while you're learning
right.
the content.
But what I'm hearing that you are saying is that we don't necessarily have to do a training of the trainers workshop for facilitators. You can do that, like the one you mentioned now in the Eastern Cape, but you can also train or assist the facilitators experientially during the running a workshop. Is
absolutely,
that
yeah. So that's very much, I mean, yeah. I think how we've done it is... bring them on board through the process.
Right, and that's also less heavy on resources to have dedicated train-the-trainer workshops.
Yeah.
Okay, so what principles need to be understood by module facilitators?
Well, I think the educational principles that we discussed in our first episode are important, and the process issues that we discussed in the second. So those very much, I think, would be the background thing, and the reason for doing this podcast series is to help people who want to be facilitators or maybe don't have the support to be facilitators to think through some of these issues. We find that we need to emphasize the importance of not being experts delivering knowledge, but rather being facilitators who encourage learning and support groups to use the module material. Our experience is that this needs to be emphasized again and again. And one of our colleagues, who's one of the leads in terms of workshop facilitation in Sunstripe, when he was looking at some of the things we said we'd cover, he said, please can you make sure you emphasize this again and again,
yes.
even though we're saying it often already, because it's so important, and we all come from such a background of the didactic teaching, the expert to student kind of module. And for people who come from that background, or people who are specialists in the field, for example, often struggle with this because they've got knowledge, they want to give answers, and they need to be encouraged again and again to see themselves as facilitators of learning. And part of that also is learning to trust the process. So we found that quite a few times, new facilitators, we've had the pre-conference workshop with them session, and they're quite skeptical and they're not quite sure how this is going to work out. But as they see it happening and they see the value of it, they become passionate
yes.
about the approach and actually really do adopt it. So that's why I think sort of separate training of trainers is not as good as actually seeing it in action and
oh,
be
right.
part of it in action.
I see, that's it. It's also, I think we must give credit team that developed the material.
Absolutely.
Oh, yes. Mm. Yeah, now this has made it so much easier to incorporate facilitators right from the beginning, that they don't have to do their own research and develop material.
So, do we need to stop because of the background noise?
So we talked a bit about the anxiety of the new facilitators. Now, let's talk a bit about how you deal with this anxiety that comes with facing a new group and presenting a workshop for the first time.
I think all of us who've been in a new situation, and particularly if you're not feeling like you have all the content knowledge, and identifies with that anxiety. I had that the first time I was involved with one of these Stripe HIV Fundamentals workshops, because I'm not working in the field of HIV all the time. I think it's about giving support. It's reassuring people that it's okay. They don't have to have all the answers. That joint preparation for the workshop and discussing it together is very useful. Actually, ideally, what should happen with it hasn't happened every time, but ideally is that if two people are running a module, they sit down and discuss that module together and agree on who's going to do what and map it out together. let new facilitators take on a few activities, not necessarily the whole thing. So break the module up into chunks and let the new facilitator only do some parts, and eventually they can take over everything. I think also is while the workshop is happening is to give feedback all the way along, so not just wait to the end. So maybe when groups are busy with discussions during the workshops, just to have a quiet word with the new facilitator and saying, you know, I think you did that well, that worked nicely. Maybe you could think about doing this for the next activity. You know, I think you spoke too much and gave too much input at that point, whatever, and trying to look at that. You know, most of the time it's best to actually start by asking them what they felt or how they felt things worked. And be ready to provide backup and being available to step in to assist. We certainly had an instance in one of our workshops where it was clear the personal facilitator wasn't coping and was resorting to kind of reading from the facilitator's guide. And so another facilitator just gently stepped in and took over then, you know, and sort of was modeling that. Again, it's important, though, to discuss that with the person afterwards.
Yes. Yeah, I do think it's important that you role model some of the facilitation. And you can fairly easily achieve that by just doing the first one or two activities of a module and then let them follow after your activity.
Yes. And obviously, there's it's good to, when you role model, also to say, I don't know the answer, but let's look how we can generate the answer in the group. So also sort of role model situations where you seem to be stuck or you're not perfect. Yeah. So then how do you assist facilitators who feel that they have inadequate content knowledge? Like Ian mentioned, when he went into the first workshop, he felt a bit inadequate because he's not working in HIV all the time. Okay, so how do you deal with the anxiety that comes with facing a new group and presenting a workshop for the first time?
I think most of us can identify with that if we've been involved in these sort of things, that we must recognize that it is something that provokes anxiety, especially if you're not used to standing up in front of a group. So we need to take that seriously. And there's also the anxiety of not having the content expertise. I felt that myself for the first time being involved in one of the Stripe HIV Fundamentals workshops. I'm not working in HIV care all the time. I don't have that at my fingertips and feeling that I was lacking in that area. So I fully understand that. I think it's important to acknowledge that, to give support, to tell people it's okay, and to reassure people that there is backup and there is support. What really helps is jointly preparing for the workshop. Ideally, that if two people are running a module together, that they sit and go through the module together and plan who is doing what. So break people in gently, let them do one or two activities, and then steadily build up to being able to do more. And some people get it straight away and can take over running a whole module almost immediately, and others may need a bit more time and preparation and getting different parts to do that. During the workshop, it's helpful as well to give feedback and to discuss how people feel about how things are going and engage in that. So, for example, between activities, when the groups are having small group discussions, one can just have a gentle word with the new facilitator and say, how do you feel that went? You know, I think you were maybe talking a little bit too much there, needed to give more to the group. I think what you did there was really great. I think you really encouraged that. I mean, with the Uppington facilitator we're talking about, I mean, it happened where he decided to do these extra icebreakers. I mean, to say that's great. It really, you know, makes things happen and so on. And allowing people the freedom to actually express their personality in the process. And that it's not a rigid way of doing things. But also having to to be backup, as I mentioned, but also sometimes having to step in when things aren't going well. So we had a situation as well in a workshop where somebody was not feeling comfortable and landed up essentially reading everything that was in the facilitator guideline, which was, you know, getting close to death by PowerPoint. This was death by reading from the guide, and just to gently step in and sort of take over and then sort of reflect on that afterwards in terms of that.
Yeah, I also think it's useful to role model what we want with the activities and to allow people to ease in. So if a person is a new facilitator is involved in a module, that you take on the first one or two activities, that they just get a feel of what you are expecting in terms of facilitation.
So we've talked a little bit about people who feel that they have inadequate content knowledge, and how would you assist facilitators with that aspect?
I think the key thing is to remind them, as we remind ourselves, of the process of all teaching and all learning. That is something that the ECHO group, Extended Community Health Outcomes, comes from University of New Mexico, are very strong about when they run their Zoom workshops, that everyone is teaching and everyone is learning. So as Francois said, it's about modeling that and reminding them that. It's around admitting as well when you don't know things and showing that. I think assisting them by encouraging them that they can call on other facilitators, that they can call on participants for input, and reminding them that we are facilitators. We're not teachers. We're not lecturers. And also by saying, look, there are people in the team who have content knowledge. If you get stuck, please, you know, Francois or Brad or whoever, you know, they'll help you if you get stuck, and feel free to call on them. So.
Yeah. Yeah, and use the group and use the devices in the group to find the content. Right. Okay, so now let's talk a bit about feedback. So how do you provide feedback to and receive feedback from facilitators during and after the workshop?
I think it's very important that feedback is two-way, that feedback is not only from you know, us to new facilitators. And sitting with all the facilitators at the end of the day, end of day one, end of the workshop, day two, I've found it very useful to hear some of the insights. It's also really great to hear how excited they get about the process and the positive feedback, but they often do bring up issues that one misses oneself. So I mean, I think that's important. But then also to get them thinking about the process. What was the experience? What have they learned? And to again then discuss that together as a group. And they give feedback to each other through that process. During the workshop, one, as I mentioned already, sometimes one has to intervene because there's too much of a particular problem, somebody being too didactic, somebody taking too much time. Sometimes it has to be sort of urgently, but often can be done at a break when there's a group discussion or something. But then one can come back to those things when you meet with the facilitators afterwards. Ideally, and I recognize we haven't always managed to do that, but ideally one should have an individual session with a facilitator to debrief on the experience and to address issues that may have arisen. People react differently to the experience, and for some people it might be liberating and exhilarating, but to others it might be a bit intimidating, the fact that, especially if they haven't felt in control. So I mean, to talk that through and hear what they have felt are the issues that one can actually talk to.
Yeah, I do think it's important to schedule time after the workshop. You actually arrange an appointment with the facilitators. I actually was in a space where it was a bit rushed at the end of a workshop. And then having to give feedback that sometimes is a bit hard to swallow is not that ideal. And it's also then important to frame the purpose of the feedback. It's to tweak what they're doing. It's not to be critical, but rather to assist them. that they can have better outcomes.
And I think modeling in that as well. So I think also to be, as we've talked about, knowing, saying you don't know everything, also be very clear that we're learning in this process as well, in terms of the process of a facilitating, and asking if there are any reflections from the group in terms of how we can improve the workshop and how we can do better in terms of what we're doing.
Yeah, of course, in the theory of feedback theory, there's something called Pendleton's rules, which is a very simple tool. So when you do feedback, you first ask the group to reflect on what went well in this workshop. And they are not allowed to say anything negative. And people find it quite difficult. So they must reflect first on what went well. And then once that is done, then you say what can be improved. Not what went badly, what can be improved. And that is, like Ian and Franja said, actually focuses on why we are having this feedback. Then one can also use the stages of reflection, especially if there's more problematic or difficult things. But then I think that should be more individual, and feedback must always be timeous, so you can't do that a day later. It must be timeous, constructive, and must be on the issue and not on the person. Okay, so anything else to add to episode 5 from Ian and Franja?
Nothing at this stage, thanks.
No, I mean, I'm actually just been amazed at how well the new facilitators that we've been involved with have done and how enthusiastic they've been. So it's been a privilege to be part of that process and watching it.
Yeah, and they will be taking the trainings forward, and that means sustainability. So that brings us to the end of episode 5. Which was about bringing new facilitators on board, preparing them for their role, and sharing feedback with them after the workshop. So at the end of our series of podcasts on facilitating STRIPE HIV workshops, I would just like to thank our partners, the African Forum for Research and Education in Health, AfriHealth, and the University of California, San Francisco. And a special thanks for our funders, the Health Resources and Services Administration, otherwise known as HRSA, in Washington, D.C. in the States. Thank you. We hope that you enjoyed our podcast series and that you will be able to use it in your own practice. So I would like to acknowledge our partners in the STRIPE HIV project, the African Forum for Research and Education in Health, AfriHealth, and the University of California, San Francisco, as well as our funders, the Health Resources and Services Administration, also known as HRSA, in Washington, D.C. in the USA. We sincerely trust that you have enjoyed our podcast series on facilitating STRIPE HIV workshops, that you have learned from it, and that you would be able to apply it in your practice. You are welcome to contact us at an email, afrihealth@gmail.com, and then just put in your contact line, STRIPE Podcast. Thank you.